listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is Monday morning. That means it is time for us to check in with our friend, Dr. Bob Weiss of Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. Dr. Weiss, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Andy, to you and your listeners. I hope everybody is staying cool. I guess it's going to be one of the last hot days, but I suppose it's going to be in the mid-80s. But, of course, then you have good old St. Louis humidity. So,
oh, we're looking at a high of 95 today.
Oh, boy. Well, I had to get out back out on my bicycle and do a little bit before it gets up to noon. I mean, it's
at least on
so
a bicycle,
bad.
there's a breeze. You're creating some airflow, right?
Well, yeah, the breeze is pretty nice, but, you know, when you're biking anywhere from 40 to, like, a few days ago, I did 64 miles.
Wow.
You get pretty tired, but you have to drink a lot of water to keep yourself hydrated,
right,
know what you're doing. So anyway, I'm just getting ready for a little bit of a race, and at my tender age, it's kind of fun if I can stay with the young kids for a while and not end up in the intensive care unit of the hospital.
Good for you.
Yeah, well, anyway, what I have here, I have lots of subjects, as usual, for your listeners, just to kind of bring them up to snuff. The very last one, I want to share some information on some things that are just kind of happening in the field of bioethics and what some very famous writer called Wesley Smith has been saying about the sort of the liberal side of this. I hate to use that particular descriptive adjective of what some people are perceiving in bioethics. And bioethics, of course, is defined by what is right and wrong for moral conduct and judgment regarding life issues. And, of course, our standard there is the Holy Scriptures, the Word of God, that doesn't return empty. So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes here. Just one of the more interesting ones, and this may perhaps be the most interesting one of all of these, is that people now are, and this came out of the journal Science, which I read is a very powerful peer-reviewed journal in science, and it's called Science, and it talks about facing a moral dilemma over driverless cars that are being produced by Google and other, over Germany they're working on one, Volkswagen's working on one, other companies, of course, are. And the moral dilemma comes down to this in this article in Science, that people are starting to get contradictory responses regarding a scenario, for example, like and they tend to take, I'm going to use a big fancy philosophical word here. It's called utilitarian. It's called the greatest good for the greatest number, sort of the keep happy principle, as some people call it. And that some would prefer an autonomous vehicle to minimize casualties in extreme dangers. In other words, if we just have driverless cars, then at least the person who would have been driving the car wouldn't be dead, but perhaps maybe other people would be. Now, that may sound a little quirky, but that's what some people are saying. And the other side of the coin is some people believe that this would mean that if you have a car with one rider swerve off the road and crash to avoid a crowd of 10 pedestrians, that would be good for some. But some people say, yeah, but if I have a car that's programmed for me and I'm in a situation where it's either me or the crowd that I'm heading for, I would prefer that it save me. So the dilemma that's coming, the moral dilemma, what's right and wrong for how these driverless cars will be programmed, and clearly it's going to come down to that. There will be, as we know with Google and other companies, driverless cars on the roads eventually. Probably, I don't know what time frame that would be, but it's going to happen. I think that people need to kind of, again, start thinking about this. Most people want to live, it says in this article, certainly would in a world where cars will minimize casualties, but everybody wants their own car to protect them at all costs. So there's conflicting data on this, and it is a moral dilemma. Maybe your listeners might be thinking, my goodness, what's this country coming to? But there's enough science fiction movies out years ago that showed driverless, you know, automated cars. And I think that it's just something that this type of research is called this a social dilemma, in which people could end up making conditions less safe for everyone by acting in their own interest. And that's kind of what I want to conclude with this particular one is, there are now people talking in peer-reviewed journals about the social dilemmas that these driverless cars are going to be coming up with. One other one is, and I'm just going to mention this briefly, Andy, because of this whole issue of transgender with men becoming women, it tends to be more of that. And I understand, I just read a brief note that Bruce Jenner now is wanting to come back to what he was originally, that is, looking like a man. But there are doctors now, and this has been published, that some of their, when they have been doing uterine transplants, and they have been doing this now, only one success out of 14 for women who are born without a uterus to conceive a child. They have had one success over in Sweden, and this has been published in a peer-reviewed journal, so we know it is what it is. Now we have some handful of transgender people, men who have dressed as women who are interested in this. So this may sound kind of yucky, the yucky sort of thing, but this is kind of, unfortunately, what's happening and the direction that this whole issue of transgenderism is going. The other one, the last two, is I want to just sort of reanimate. Perhaps our listeners can recall the cloning issues that occurred in the state of Missouri not too long ago, and also the whole issue with embryonic stem cell research, where people were, regenerative medicine people up in Kansas City, were wanting to take the spare frozen embryos and these human beings, thaw them out, and kill them, of course, and then use the cells inside of a 4 to 5 day old embryonic human being to study them for growing tissues, skin, eyes, nerves, and so forth, muscle in tissue, and then perhaps to transplant them into people who have certain conditions that need certain cells to save their lives. That's embryonic stem cell research. There has not been much said on that because what has taken over is what's called, I'm going to use the term and explain it, induced pluripotent stem cells. In a human being, as it's all around 5 to 7 days, there's a whole group of cells, approximately 200 or so, and those are called pluripotent. All that potent means, you know, potency. They have activity there. They mean something, and that simply means pluripotent means these are cells that can turn into, that make the skin, the nerve, the muscle, the blood vessels, the eyes, as the human being being developed over 9 months in the womb of the mother. That's what this term means. Many potent cells that produce various tissues. Well, they have actually done this by using skin cells. They have induced viruses into skin cells from human beings and reversed the process back to these pluripotent stem cells. And now people have to understand these are not human embryos. These are just skin cells that have been tricked into believing they have these cells that can produce skin, muscle, nerve, and so forth. And, of course, this is most of this has been known between researchers in Japan and Wisconsin. It's still in the very early stages, but it's, again, being kind of reanimated, resurrected, because there's a lot of papers coming out on this, but it clearly is the technology that is overshadowing and taking more important in terms of moral issues out of the question regarding the life of an embryonic human being. So, of course, Christians would support something like this because it doesn't involve the destruction of an embryonic human being. It is simply a way of biological researching into helping other people, and they're pretty far off in actually producing some of this, but they suspect within 5 to 10 years they may be able to at least generate muscle, perhaps some skin, and maybe some help in eye conditions through reverting skin cells back into some of these other tissues. So I just want to bring that term up because it is being published in other general magazines that people read, like Time Magazine and so forth. The last thing is, there's a book out by, and I encourage your listeners to get into this gentleman. His name's Wesley J. Smith. He's probably one of America's leading commentators on bioethical issues. He's very conservative. And he just wrote another one of his 14 books called Culture of Death, The Age of Do No Harm Medicine. And And he's very, very concerned about how people have less and less respect for the sanctity of human life and healthcare issues. And the more serious problem, of course, is the popular media, who is increasingly tabloid in its approach to reporting these issues, informing the general population that many of the things that are happening in beginning end of life issues really are the ends justify the means. It's not a big deal to worry about euthanasia, assisted suicide, and so forth. And so he's coming out very much trying to educate people, as he said, that we need to know more and more about this stuff because these are areas that people are being more and more pushed into because of healthcare laws. So those are some of the issues that I've sort of gleaned off my list for this morning's discussion.
The I think the topic of physician-assisted suicide is going to continue to be an important topic for us to address, especially here on His Time and on Faith and Family, as well as it continues to be a prominent issue in the United States and throughout the world now.
Well, yeah, I know your listeners, I know you've covered it and others have chatted about this whole issue, and it may very well be for some of your listeners, and I don't know, I can't back this up with any facts, but I think this, it just doesn't happen. End-of-life issues, euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide, this isn't an issue for older adults. Many people perceive this to be something that, well, this is just happening with older adults. No, it's not age-specific in the five states we have it here in the United States, and certainly Belgium and the Netherlands and other places. It is very, very, it's becoming more widespread. Where people, it's becoming easier to say, well, you know, I really don't like what I'm living with, so can you do anything about it? And so in that context, you know, the connection between euthanasia, that is giving a person a shot that actually kills them, or the physician-assisted suicide where the doctor gives the death cocktail of the person, they take it and they die, what's the correlation to other life issues? I think that we cannot just ignore the correlation to, for example, to elective abortion. That clearly is another form of euthanasia, where the doctor is clearly taking the life of the child at the behest of the mother and the father many times. And what about other bioethical issues in terms of who decides who lives and who dies? I think this can also be related to in vitro fertilization and who decides what embryonic human being is going to be implanted into a woman and which one isn't, based on a scale of, 1 to 5. You know, the 5s look good, the 3s don't look so good, so we may not want to implant that one and they'll be discarded. So all of these issues connect to our particular, what we believe, teach, confess, in our first article, that God has made me and all creatures and given me my body, soul, eyes, ears, and all my members. So, and this, we believe, of course, comes from conception. So life is a continuum, and these are issues that will continue to impact us all, because I think bioethicists in general are increasingly more and more disdainful of religious belief, certainly Christian belief. And the mainstream value, they just don't comport with the views of most people in bioethics. And what I mean by that is most people in this field, in bioethics, are very, do what you have to do. The ends justify the means. As long as you get what you're after, that's what's important. And that's kind of where mainstream bioethics is. There are several bioethicists like this Wesley Smith and Leon Koff and Paul Ramsey and so forth. Now he's you know, sainted, but Paul Ramsey is a gentleman, and I think your listeners can use this in their discussion with other people who struggle over this, is to look at his concept called patient as a person, which this is a crucial insight that has developed in a lot of good bioethical decisions. but the patient as a person is very, very important and kind of slows the process down on people who want to start taking other person's lives. So those are all kind of important issues that, you know, kind of lead us to, we need to listen, we need to learn, we need to be reading more on these issues so that, and not to avoid them.
Sure, sure. I have to ask, have you seen the film Me Before You yet?
No, I have not. I have not had a chance to see it, but I'll try and get to that. I think it's still in the theaters, and maybe next week or the week after we'll have to talk about that.
Yes, yeah, we need to have a conversation about that, about the issues that film brings up and how the film was used, I think, for, well, we'll get to that when we talk about it.
We'll get to that. Yeah. I'll take my notepad with me, Andy.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Weiss. Always great to chat with you on Monday mornings.
You bet. God's peace to you and your listeners. Bye-bye.
To you as well. Coming up in just a little bit, we have our study of the daily lectionary. Hope you can join us for that. And morning prayer, sacred music, all parts of his time to start your day with the word of God and prayer on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news for over 90 years.